Hey there, welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. My name is Kevan Davani. I hope you all are healthy and take care of your health and your safety in times of whatever COVID-19, SARS, COVID-19, whatever. So I'm really looking forward to my next talk with Rodolfo Novak of Conkite, maker of the Cold Card wallet. I haven't experimented or tested it yet, so I'm really looking forward to that soon with another expert such as Sven Schneiders. We're planning to do like a series of instructional tutorial videos, and I want to ask him about trade-offs, security, privacy, ease of use, UX, UI, especially for noobs, for Bitcoin beginners, because this is what the podcast show is also about. The main target people are, beginners, noobs who don't have don't have that much technical skills, knowledge, experience, or don't have much time, patience, or they just want to, have a convenient thing to do. But, we're all in the learning process, so it's important to, stay up to date and educate yourself and be open-minded and really stay safe. I mean, it doesn't matter whatever hard wallet you're using, whether it be Trezor or Bitbox or whatever. But at the end of the day, it's all about, security, trade-offs. It's about minimizing the attack vectors and all that. So without further ado, this is my talk with Rodolfo Novak from Conkite. Let me know if you have any questions. And if you should like it, please give it a like, retweet, share, whatever. Follow me on Twitter. It would really support me in any shape or form. Thank you so much for support and for listening. Here you go.
Welcome to the Total Bitcoin Podcast Show. Rodolfo Novak is my very special guest. Rodolfo, how are you doing? Everything okay?
Good. Yeah, thanks for having me. Still uninfected.
Okay. Where are you, by the way? Can I ask you approximately where are you located?
I'm in Canada, Toronto.
Okay. Yeah. So what's the situation over there? Can you talk about
it? Oh, it is, right? The cases are growing exponentially, but as usual, governments start slowing down testing. So I'm sure the numbers are going to start to slow down too, because, if you don't test, it doesn't exist, right?
Okay. Rodolfo, so I think I saw you at one of these conferences, but we didn't talk. We just probably saw each other was that maybe in Berlin, the Lightning Conference, or was it in Riga?
No, I didn't. Oh, Riga, yes. I didn't go to the
Lightning. So I saw you in Riga. Yeah, that's right. So I listened to one of your last interviews with Stephen Levera. I mean, I can, refer most people especially when it comes, because I'm not technical, so I really want to talk more about the broader picture, the bigger picture, or the break it down more really for noobs. You said in that interview that when you build your products, your reference point would be the most experienced user. Now, before we go into this, now I myself, I mean, I have, I'm not technical. I have experience, with the Trezor One wallet, with the Bitbox only Bitcoin wallet, with the multi-sig wallet of Casa. You want to give a brief overview from your perspective, what are the trade-offs? What do you think are the trade-offs that a newbie, I'm someone who really educates people and tries to, help them set up the wallet. And I notice people just don't have the time, the patience, and they really don't have the time. People have family, the kids, and they don't have really that much time to go into depth and really understand, I guess it's also depends on your the degree of your skills, knowledge, paranoia, and how cautious you are. What is your overall take? When it comes to the decision making of what kind of hard wallet, what kind of trade offs, simplicity, easiness, easy of use, and why that reference point when it comes to the cold card wallet, the most sort of experienced user.
I guess I'll put it bluntly. If understanding some of the stuff, go to the exchange and sell all the coins you have. Mm-hmm. Do that right now. Because what's the point?
Right.
You know, if you want to be your own bank, if you want to have a self-sovereign money kind of deal, you're going to have to do some research and you're going to have to understand it. Right? Wait till the kids go to sleep and read.
Right.
You know, that's the reality of this stuff. So what I can tell you is this. Code Card is very easy to use, right? It's extremely easy to use. It may not look that way initially because, again, like you said, our focus, our sort of features for people who care about this stuff, right? So, but that doesn't mean that it does not take just a few minutes to set it up, right? I mean, you set up the pin, set up the seed, write it down, and you're good to go, right? Now, we don't make compromises, for example, in privacy. We let you figure out if you want to make, for example, those compromises. You can run it with your own node. You can run it with Electrum. You can run it with Wasabi. You can run it with Blue Wallet. You can run it, I think you can watch it on Samurai. Anyways, like it is supported by many wallets. And I think it's important for the makers not to push a rhetoric to users that they don't need to understand because it's very easy. I think it's important and it's our sort of responsibility to get people that want to have this kind of good money to also have good procedures around their money. Because, you know, it's possible that some of these manufacturers won't be around tomorrow, right? And you need to know how to recover those seeds. You need to test your backups. That episode with Livera, I really go into depth into a bunch of this stuff. I recommend people listen to that if they want to understand more. But yes, I think it's our responsibility as people who understand this stuff to really get other people to understand this stuff too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you're right with the recovery procedure because I asked, you know, the Kazakh team or actually directly James Lop, I said, you know, what happens if, you know, probably, you know, I mean, probabilistically, what if Casa doesn't exist anymore? What if, you know, people cannot use their server or the Casa software? And then, you know, he referred me to the Casa recovery guides. And I looked at it, I'm like, okay, I mean, you know, and he compared it to baking a cake, like, you know, it's sort of easy. But, you know, of course, he's talking from a technical experience perspective. So I'm not sure whether, you know, an average user could maybe, yeah, you know, you'd have to learn it. You'd have to really elaborate, like, what are those steps? And because it's not, you know, it's not a plug and play anymore. It's really like going into the details and finding your, the recovery process and how, you know. So when you say like, okay, the Code Card is easy to use, like, what is it, would you say, what's the difference, let's say, compared to a Trezor or BitBox
So Trezor is open source, right? But it has no physical security, zero security. Mm-hmm. Anybody that gets a hold of the device physically could, for about $100 in a few minutes, take the seed out. So essentially assume that a Trezor has to stay in a safe box, and if somebody gets hold of the safe box, seed's also gone, right? For Ledger, Ledger is closed source. It is physically secure. I mean, no device is 100% unhackable, but it is fairly secure. But it is closed source. And I personally would never use a closed source device for my Bitcoin needs, because you know, the whole point of this experiment is not to trust. So, and then there is some other layers there of like, you can't really fully trust devices. So that's why you want to do them air gapped, so that if there is a flaw or something, nobody's getting access to them remotely. So Cold Card does things differently than both of them. We wanted to essentially solve both those problems in a single device, right? So Cold Card is fully open source, but it also uses secure elements. So Cold Card has a very reasonable level of physical security, right? Right now, probably costs $500,000 for you to get in. You know, the way we look at this is it's about increasing the cost of attack. Attacks are always possible, right? And like I said, like nothing is unhackable. So with the current labs that are working on it, it costs a lot of money to try to get it. And I still have not had a positive full extraction of a Cold Card Mark III, even by people with, you know, $1 million labs. That doesn't mean it's not possible. It just means it hasn't been done yet.
Mm-hmm. Would that mean that even theoretically, if the hardware were, you know, from the point of the production facility, you know, like compromised, would that be like a physical risk?
Yeah. So we did things again very, very differently than the other competitors. With Ledger, Trezor, you're trusting it to create your seed in an unsecure device. Right, that's for me like unacceptable. And then on Ledger, you're trusting it with closed source. It is certified, it is audited certified, but that doesn't mean anything to me, right? Because I cannot verify it, or the community cannot verify it. So with Cold Card, we ask you not to trust the device, even though it's all open source and you can replace the chips, load your own firmware, do the whole shebang to verify it yourself, we built a dice rolling feature into it. Mm-hmm. So you can put in your own entropy to generate the seed. So you don't trust us. You know, that's literally our motto. Please don't trust us. Okay. Because, you know, unless you have an electron microscope, you cannot verify the chips. That's true for any open chip, closed chip, or anything really. And that's completely unrealistic, right? For people to be verifying the chips on their devices. Mm-hmm. Physically. So why don't we just trust minimize it and have you roll your own entropy in there? And then the next step is Cold Card can work very easy with a USB cable connected to Electrum kind of thing, or what is really designed for is you use it completely disconnected from anything. It's just connected to a battery via USB. And then you use the micro SD card to shuffle back and forth between unsigned transactions and signed transactions. And it works very well with that. Okay. And then when you get the transactions to sign, we go a step further than the competition does. We show every single output of the transaction. We have some heuristics to check for some sanity on the, so that you're not being met in the middle for that transaction. There's a lot of very, very advanced security built in. We've also built in another very cool security feature, which is we have essentially two pins, but we call them like the first pin, second pin. So let's say your device has been compromised or replaced by another device, right? Like a fake device on your desk that's trying to fish the pin from you so that they can attack the real device because they can't break it. We split the pin in half. And once you put half of the pin, if you get it right, it shows you two words. These two words were given to you when you set it up the first time. And then if the words are correct to you, it's kind of like a two-factor authentication. If the words are correct to you, then you type in the second part of the PIN. If the words are incorrect, that means this device is not your device. So you've never given away your full PIN. So that's a pretty neat one. Another thing we do is our devices are clear cased, so you can actually inspect the device, make sure there is nothing added in there that looks suspicious, like a radio sending your PIN to another room or something. We have also duress pins. You have a brick me pin. So say you're in a duress situation or something that it makes sense to you to just brick the device, you can brick the device and it's gone, done forever. That means you're going to have to recover from a password, but maybe that's the situation you're in.
Okay. Can I just ask? Yep. So with a cold card compared to, let's say, Trezor or Bitbox, it seems there are multiple parts to it. You need to know, what if you lose, like, you had at least like two pins, right, with the cold card? So you have like multiple things that you have to keep safe, right? What if you lose one of those things?
Sorry, say that again.
So compared like to Trezor, you set up your 39 mnemonic phrase, you got your mm-hmm. PIN and that's it. But with the cold card, you have multiple things that you have to keep safe, right?
Not necessarily. So it's the same. So a cold card. So do you know how you have a little paper sheet that has your 24 words?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a cold card, we give you, again, 28 word paper sheet. Sorry, 24 word sheet. Mm-hmm. And the only difference is we make an extra two spots for you to write down the two secret words that are between you and the device. Mm-hmm. But you don't need, so let's say cold card is destroyed, right? Completely destroyed. And you can't get another one. You don't need any of that. You only need is your 24 words. Your 24 words that work for Trezor, work for cold card, work for Ledger. We're all using the same standard. The extra security features are code card specific. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's all fairly straightforward. If you know how to use a Trezor, you can use a code card. It's probably easier.
Great. Mm-hmm. So what's the feedback that you get like from really like new noobs or beginners? Is there like any kind of testimonial or feedback you guys get? Like
people already love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people normally they get to it from like most of the people who understand this stuff, refer you to a cold card. And then people find that like when they get it initially, it looks a little scary kind of thing. But then as they watch one video online, they immediately know how to use it. And it takes like 5 minutes to understand it. Probably because we don't send it in a pretty box. We send it in a secure bag.
A pretty transparent bag, right?
Exactly. The bag is tamper evidence too. So that you verify the serial number of the bag with the device too. We go through extreme lengths. This is definitely a next generation of security for hardware wallets. And the market seems to like it.
Yeah. Now, listen, I mean, me and a good friend of mine, a Bitcoin friend who also wrote brilliant articles, Sven Schnieders. I'm not sure whether you know him or not, but he's much more technical than me. But we agreed, we should sit together because he also lives in Vienna, like me, in Austria. And we would do a series of really short, testimonial videos or instructional videos, tutorial videos, and show all these different, whatever trade-offs and different products, whether it be Trezor or cold card or what a Bitbox by Shapeshift Security. So, and just, give people like the chance to evaluate for themselves what's best for them. But if cold card truly, because I admit it, I've never tried it. And probably I was until now a little bit afraid it's going to be a little bit too complicated. I admit I'm a little bit, I don't know, maybe too convenient when it comes to those things. But it would be great, to show people that it's actually much, much easier than it looks like, as you said.
Yeah, I think more videos, more education will get us there, right? There is a lot of good resources online. Mm-hmm. And it's getting better. Every week, somebody that does good videos teaching people how to do stuff, makes a cold card one, and it's like, and it's even better than the previous one, kind of thing.
Yeah, there's hardly anything in German. That's why we want to do it more in German language.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I think it would be very helpful. Cool. There is some in Portuguese now. There's some in Spanish. We've made our docs website also open source, and people have been sort of making pull requests to add their videos to the website. It's growing. I mean, Code Card is maybe almost 3 years old. I can't remember now. I kind of lost track. So, we came into the space. I mean, we've been making hardware security for Bitcoin before Ledger and Trezor existed, but it was for enterprise for us as well, right? For CoinKite.com. When that service, when we decided to move on from that service, we looked at the space and we just couldn't use what was available. We were not very happy with the two options that were in the market. That's really the motivation behind making Code Card to begin with. Mm-hmm. So this device did come much later than the others to the space, and it takes a while, right, for a lot of education and things to be out there. But it's happening. We're now, I think, like the third largest seller of hardware wallets.
What's the latest version?
Mark 3.
Okay.
Code Card Mark 3.
Where do you see this going, like with the next version, whatever?
Yeah. So the way, unlike the competition, we don't believe in status quo in terms of security. Like, mm-hmm. it's a new space. Things are evolving. Mm-hmm. It's actually a point of contention to me that devices are not being created, new devices that are more secure. So we're going to keep on making new ones and exploring security and exploring, how to make things better. Code Card Mark 1, it's like an order of magnitude more secure than a Trezor. And then Mark 2 is, it's way, like, and then now Mark 3 still have not been broken. No seed extraction. We are working on the next version, but there's still some time from now. Mark 3 still, it's very secure,
right?
So
as it's evolving, how many times would people have to update the device?
Honestly, forever, right? This is a cat and mouse game with security researchers and with attackers, right? I mean, when you think about it, paying $100 for a device that holds your life savings, it's ridiculous, right?
Right.
Completely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, if you're going to update every year or two to a new device, that makes complete sense, right? A year is a long time in security research. So we're working with chip manufacturers to improve stuff. There's a lot going on, again, in a space that's only 10 years old. It's a matter of keep on iterating, keep on improving things. Our designs are open source, our schematics are open source. People can build a code card themselves. Right. That's kind of like our mentality.
Right. What I was going to ask you before that is that you can use can you use the Code Card wallet as a standalone? Like, would you need like really an Electrum wallet additionally? Like, download like Electrum wallet, or is that like a, can you use it as a HODL? Just as a HODL. Right.
It's a shame that hardware wallets were called wallets, because hardware wallets are not wallets. Electrum is a wallet. Bitcoin Core is a wallet, right? Blue Wallet is a wallet. The hardware devices are just signature devices. Right. They don't have any UTXO, so no blockchain information in them. They're completely disconnected. So they are unable to function by themselves, right? So Electrum or Core needs to build a transaction because he knows the blockchain data so that the hardware can sign it for it. We should have called them keychains.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a keychain actually. Yeah. It gives you grants you access to, yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the multisig of Casa? Is that like from a trade-off perspective and security perspective? Do you have any insights or knowledge about that?
Yeah, so we've worked with them, right? Mm-hmm. To make that integration happen. I think Casa is a very interesting product. It's a pretty cool product. You know, there are privacy concerns with that with that product, but you know, different people, different needs. So, you know, if what they're selling makes sense to you, you know, it's a good product. It makes sense for you. You know, multisig is great. You can do multisig on Coldcard and, you know, Electrum or whatever. You can also use our open source Bunker to do your own cosign service, but that's like a more advanced thing. Eventually people like you are going to do Bunker for your friends kind of thing, you know. That's the kind of thing. It's a, you're going to have a person who's knowledgeable in a group of people and they would just help their friends. But yeah, I mean, so Casa does offer something interesting, and I think people should definitely look into it if it makes sense for them, especially if you're more noob type.
Right. And what about Bitbox? Do you have like, because you hardly spoke about Bitbox. Is that similar to Trezor, would you say, or?
Yeah. So Bitbox, the first one that they made was completely wrecked. There were a bunch of problems. Forgot to use the secure element on it. It's a tricky problem, a tricky product. And then I think the second version came out. Mm-hmm. You know, they do have some architectural choices that are similar to ours, but there's a lot of things that are not quite the way we would do. I just don't hear much about that product. So like, I don't, you know, I haven't seen much movement on that. And I think last time I checked, their online store was not there anymore. So,
Do you think is the physical extraction, you know, possible? Like in the case of Trezor, has been no evaluation of the security?
I just don't think there is enough eyes on it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, unless you reach a certain critical mass of users, there's not going to be a lot of attention put on it. That's just, you know, the reality of how these things go, right? They have, you know, they have some smart people there, and they have done some stuff. But again, it's just not a product I pay much attention to. Just critical mass issue. There's like hundreds of hardware wallets out there.
Yeah, yeah.
We are essentially like the only Bitcoin only, and that's what we do. You know, we don't want to waste any resources on alts. I think, yeah, every single other hardware wallet out there supports mini coins. You know, some of them will make a gimmick, right, where they will have like a firmware that's Bitcoin only, right, for marketing kind of thing. But you know, you're still wasting a ton of resources on alts and still maintaining that, exactly, that source code, still dealing with the bugs of all the alts. So we're more utilitarian that way. It's a very focused product.
But it is true. I mean, the more you learn about, you know, the security features, the trade-offs, one, there is no other way than become paranoid, actually. Because I don't know how many people, you know, have, let's say, you know, a simple whatever Trezor wallet or whatever, or, you know, I think it's good to become paranoid in a way. But on the other hand, I mean, it does create a little bit of fear and concern, you know, I mean, like you know, I mean, the extreme case is like physical access to the hardware wallet. But other than that, it is really disturbing, you know, to think about all these scenarios, like what could happen if, when, you know, what do you think about that? Like,
I think what's impossible, what's possible, realistic, and sort of practical is this. Make sure you have your backups in order. Mm-hmm. Okay. Make sure you have a hardware wallet that has minimum basic physical security, right? So if you forget it in your desk, your maid cannot just extract the PIN from your hardware wallet, mm-hmm. right? Make sure you use hardware wallets air-gapped, right? USB is not air gapping. You know, air gapping means no connection, right? And make sure you run your own node. I think if you do those things, you have substantially increased the difficulty of somebody attacking you, right? And then once you have those down, then you can sort of start researching based on your life, where you live, right, and your own problems, like which other scenarios you should start investigating, right? Like, and how you can curtail those, right? Is it multi-sig your solution? Is it a 25th passphrase? Is it, do you have multiple units? Where are they? Where is your encrypted backup? Can you encrypt backup, right? For example, you can't use a computer to encrypt your seed. That's silly, right? Because the computer is compromised. You just showed your seed to the computer.
Yeah.
So what we do on Cold Card is you can encrypt your seed in a micro SD card on the device that you really trust to the seed. For example, you shouldn't put a clear seed in a safe deposit box, right? Because a banker could be ordered to open your safe deposit box, right? Mm-hmm. Or somebody could impersonate you and go to the bank and open your safe security box. They're not that great, right? They're great as a second location to keep things. So, but you don't want to keep anything there that somebody could see. So, you know, you put a encrypted seed there or partial encrypted seed, or, you know, your multi-sig setup or whatever. But point is, you know, you have to think through these scenarios. It's very important.
Right. I'm a little curious, what was your path to you know, what you're doing right now? I mean, working on Cold Card and CoinKind.
Well, you know, we've been in Bitcoin now for, you know, almost 10 years almost, like as a company. CoinKind was registered in 2012 or late 2011. Mm-hmm. Almost 10 years. And, you know, we just been around for some time. You know, some of us, have backgrounds that were pertinent, to this industry. We have like a lot of experience in hardware, you know, I grew up in Brazil. There's physical considerations there for security. Mm-hmm. You know, we do a lot of research. And we learn a lot from our users. I mean, you know, when you have almost 10 years of being in the market where people are trying to be robbed, you learn a lot, and you learn a lot from the ground. That's been very helpful.
Mm-hmm. What is is there a critical adoption rate in Brazil? Like, how many people are, what's the situation with Bitcoin? Like, how do people perceive it?
So, you know what? Yeah, I mean, I'm not, it's been some time since I'm not as connected to Brazil anymore, but, you know, I know many Bitcoiners there, and, adoption there is quite reasonable for the economy size that it is.
Do they use it as a store of value or really?
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, you know, if you grew up in a country that has monetary problems, you understand very fast store of value.
Right.
It's even politicians in Brazil now hold their bribes in Bitcoin, you know. It's seriously, there's been a few caught. It's fascinating, right? But I mean, it's again, right, like different places, different people, different needs. You know, Bitcoin is always going to be different things for different people. You know, if you live in a country where, you know, your credit card gives you points and it costs almost nothing, you're going to use that to buy Starbucks coffee, right? Mm-hmm. If you live in a country where, you know, you can't buy stuff, well, then you might use Bitcoin to buy stuff. You know, personally in Canada, you know, holding Bitcoin is better than holding Canadian dollar. You know, it's now we have a world that's a little bit in a conundrum financially and health and for health. So having your monetary wealth in a way that you can transport is a big deal. You know, I have some Jewish family that left Europe, and you know, like way back then, and you know, it was very hard for them to live with their stuff, right? Yeah. You know, some people had to give away their, you know, not us, but you know, there's stories of people who had to give away their Picasso to get a passport.
Oh yeah. Right?
So being able to transport your wealth with you safely is a big deal, very big deal. And I think that people in Western first world countries are going to learn that more and more as the world starts to become a little trickier.
With everything that's going on, Rodolfo, like, do you see like it, sort of, you know, so many inflection points coming and so much, you know, extraordinary circumstances? You know, I mean, this whole virus thing is just, you know, convenient thing also for the state to.
Oh, for sure.
Right.
Don't let a good crisis go to waste, right? Like good tragedy is great for politicians. Now they can blame all their stupid monetary policies on this.
Exactly.
You know, don't get me wrong. This stuff is terrible, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we're all concerned, you know, I mean, if you've seen my tweets, you know, I'm on board with this thing being a problem,
mm-hmm.
but you know, all this, for lack of a better term, pieces of shit, are using this tragedy as a great way of bailing out their friends and bailing out everything and print more money and completely rack everything financially, right? I mean, reality is, you know, if you are somebody who's a bit more wealthy and you have equities, you know, you hold, you know, stock, you have a house that you own and you have a car that you own. If you own things, right, you're going to probably do okay or better, right, when they devalue your money, right? But if you're an average, like, citizen, you know, earning your paycheck to paycheck and you pay rent kind of thing, your money is going to be worth a lot less. Mm-hmm. Right? We already see that. It's not that housing prices is going up. It's just that your money is going down. You know, in Canada, we can get like a 2% mortgage for 30 years with 5% down.
Incredible.
Right? I mean, it's insane. So it's essentially free money. And we're talking about like $1 million, right? It's like, you know, if you have access to $1 million in 30 years at 2% interest per year, I mean, your money is worth nothing. It's not that you're getting that much free money.
Right. And now, you know, a lot of politicians and, you know, and governments are not more and more, especially now, you know, talking about universal basic income. I mean, you know, it probably serves a purpose to a certain degree, but what, you know, the next steps would be then, you know, what happened in Cyprus, 2013, 2014, the curtailment, you know, of withdrawals. So people were not able to. So this is going to come. This is going to come more sooner or later. And then the negative interest rates are already active in Germany on retail and deposit. So do you see like a progression, like a faster and faster progression? And mm-hmm. because of that, people are now waking up to the fact, like, oh, you know, for Christ's sake, you know, I need to, you know, save my wealth or, you know, put it somewhere. And I think cold card going to be in high demand. where do you see this going?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we're just going to ramp up production, right? I mean, it's a good problem to have. People need our stuff. Great. Now we just need to make it for everybody, right? And it's been showing, right? I mean, we've been growing like a lot every week. And 2 weeks ago, we had our best week ever for sales. And it was like double, more than double.
Incredible. Triple.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah. I think people are waking up to the shortcomings of other products. And they're also waking up to maybe needing multiple products. And de-risking, really, that's what we offer, right? Is a de-risk solution,
right?
So as people come up with their plans, I think it's going to make a lot of sense. The same goes for OpenDime, our other device, right? It's selling more, and people like it and they use it. Especially
can you describe the OpenDime just for my listeners? Like what
sure. is that? Mm-hmm. So OpenDime is like a cheap little USB device, right? Mm-hmm. That's a Bitcoin bearer bond, right? It's a credit stick, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially you imagine a paper wallet that you could give it to somebody, but with essentially trust minimized. Because So a paper wallet, let's say I wanna buy your car, right? And we need to be quick, right? I don't want to wait for confirmations. I don't want to wait. So I look at the engine, I take a look at the car and I go and I give you a paper wallet, the amount that we agreed on before. So it's already confirmed, that paper wallet. The problem with that is I could have a copy of that paper wallet. And as soon as you leave, I could redeem that paper wallet. Right. So now it's just a race condition, right? It's a race problem there to see who redeems the paper wallet first. So you can't trust it. Now with OpenDime, you stick this USB stick in a computer and it initializes you give it some entropy so you don't have to trust us creating the private key. You just essentially just dump any file. It's a random. It's just a way to get entropy. But anyway, so you initialize it. It gives you a Bitcoin address. You deposit Bitcoin in it. And you take it out. What's cool is there is no backup. Nobody knows the private key. Neither you nor the receiver. Whoever has possession of the device has the actual coins.
So it's a really like a fungible like cash. Exactly.
It's physical
money, right?
Bitcoin. It's actual physical Bitcoin. Unlike those metal coins and that stuff all has the private key available, right? Mm-hmm. This is an actual fungible bearer asset. And then you can reuse this device to give it to somebody else to buy something. Or let's say you actually want to spend the Bitcoins that are inside it, right? Online or whatever. If you do, then you stick a pin to break something on the device. And then when you plug it in, it's going to reveal the private key. It unseals itself.
Oh, got it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of people use this device to make purchases or to do things, especially when they don't want to wait. Another nice feature is that you have privacy, right? Because there is no trace between you and I in terms of Bitcoin transaction. We're just carrying a UTXO. Like we're carrying a coin of Bitcoin in it.
Very practical. Yeah. How much is it? How much does it cost? Like one of
it's,
those.
It's like, I can't remember. It's like a 35 or yeah, the price sort of fluctuates, but it's around $35 for three of them.
Okay, but you have like no logistics for European Union countries. Like, I mean, you would have.
Oh yeah,
to,
we
like,
ship everywhere.
Yeah, but people, I mean, because when I got my cars, I had to pay like pretty much like custom fees and stuff like that. So, is that
there's a lot of resellers in Europe that will probably resell to you, but. You know, what I say to people is like, a few percentage of tax on something that you're going to use, again, for your financial freedom is a small price to pay.
Right.
I know it sucks giving money to the state. I mean, it's a good Bitcoin or we all hate tax. But you can also do a group buy, get a few friends and order that way, or get a friend who has a business to order so that you can get a tax return on that. Mm-hmm. There's many ways to go about it, but I think most importantly is just get it done. A few extra bucks here and there, it's a small price to pay to keep your stuff done right.
That's really super practical. So, so Rodolfo, where do you see the next 10 years going with, you know, with the, with new developments or ease of use or, you know, people more demanding hardware wallets? Where do you see this development going?
I mean, we're going to keep on improving the product, you know, both security and UX. It is getting easier to use it. Other auxiliary products and services are becoming also easier to use, right? For example, right now, to use Electrum Code Card is as easy as export wallet from Code Card. And then you can just stick that microSD on a computer and just open an Electrum and it's it. Your wallet is there. So, you know, Electrum is also probably improved the UI. Core is improving the UI. It's the same for you for Core, right? You can just export a file and you have Core, right? That's getting easier. So I think the whole ecosystem is finding more cohesion on how to do things. So, you know, it's just, that's it. It's just more security, more ease of use as the time progresses, right?
I think, and more integratable, like for example, like yes. You know, Samurai. I'm a big fan of Samurai mobile mixing. Now, is that like integratable with the hardware wallet? Is
So Samurai? I think they are working on PSBT, which is the standard we use to sign Bitcoin transactions. Mm-hmm. You know, as soon as that's out, then it's going to work. I know you can already do stuff with their watch only wallet. But I know they are working on PSBT, so that's coming. You know, it's kind of like the internet in the early days, you know, it takes time. It took 30 years to be able to order grocery online. Right. I mean, it really did.
I think the trajectory is this time much faster. I mean, you can
for sure.
Much, much more exponential. I mean, the curve.
You know. Exactly. I mean, just look, right? I mean, you know, we can send real money between each other on this call mm-hmm. with no banks, with nothing, right? Fairly easily and safely. Yeah, so, amazing. You know, it's just a matter of more products, more competition, more people using it, more feedback, and, you know, you get more improvement. It's as simple as that. The future is bright.
Yeah, as more and more people, I think, become educated and experienced, I think they will switch from their, you know, standard, say, conventional, mainstream hardware wallets like Trezor or whatever to Cold Card, right? Because it's just airtight, right? What do you call it? Air gapped. It's more secure, right?
Yeah, you know, I guess like more secure is not the way I like to describe this. The way I like to describe it is like less attack surface.
Okay, gotcha.
Right? Because mm-hmm. think about it this way, right? Like everything has bugs, right? Let's not even say nefarious or problems or anything. Everything has bugs, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say some attacker found a bug. If your device is not connected to something that he has access to, he's going to have to come and break into your house. Or your office right. to get it, mm-hmm. to exploit that bug, right? Now, if your device is connected via USB to your computer and somehow this bug is accessible via USB, now he can be remote and attack it, right? So not being connected to anything is a huge advantage. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason why like a lot of very critical infrastructure is completely offline, right? Nuclear power plants and all this stuff. It's all offline because they understand that. Sometimes the only solution is to get scissors and cut the cord. Like in a literal way. Look at the extent that they had to go to attack the Iranian enrichment plant, right? Like they couldn't just hack it. They had to create a specific virus for a specific plant, not even for information retrieval, right? It was not to get stuff out because that's not that easy. It was to try to attack it, like disconnected, right? So, but it took a state actor or many state actors, a substantial amount of resources to attack a specific place, right? Why? Because it's disconnected. So that's sort of like the mentality here. It's like, we're going to try to do all the things that are like economically viable to remove attack surface. That's sort of like our mindset. It's about mm-hmm. increasing the cost of attack or time of attack. That's how we function here.
Great, Rodolfo. So yeah. So anything else, Rodolfo, like any other forecast or prediction or anything is coming up that you want to inform my listeners about?
You know, markets are perfectly efficient and the halving is priced in.
What do you think about the stock to flow ratio? What's your opinion on the stock to flow ratio?
I think so. I'm a big fan of it's description over prescription, right? That's mm-hmm. the praxeology of the Austrian economists. You cannot deny that the price movement has followed the curve of stock to flow, right? Mm-hmm. That's undeniable. The chart is there. Does that mean you follow it forever? We don't know.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's why all economic models are bullshit in terms of prediction, but they're extremely useful as means of understanding what has happened, right?
It's a model, right? I mean,
it's a model, right? I mean, it's just, you know, models are not meant for religiosity, right? Like it's, I think you can't ignore models that have had good track record, right? Mm-hmm. But you cannot depend on them either, right? How you create your risk profiles are your own sort of way of thinking. But you know, this thing has been that's been pretty spot on so far, and even before that came about as a model, you know, we all sort of already knew like the things that happen when there is a halving, right? Like that's not, none of this is new. The halving sort of price ups and also, you know, there's a lot of miners that have access to pretty good capital in very long term sort of means. So a lot of them might not even sell until the price is to the point that they need to be sold. So the price goes up, right? Less mm-hmm. supply. I don't know. It's just fun to watch. Grab your popcorn. and let's see what happens, you know. And I personally think you'll probably go up, you know, a few months after the halving, you know.
Yeah.
A little bit dependent on some liquidity in the markets and stuff. But, you know, Bitcoin could also go away tomorrow. Who knows?
Yeah. But do you see like a spontaneous, like, you know, there's this spontaneous emergence in Austrian economics, like, huge liquidity flowing into Bitcoin because of all these circumstances, parameters, the conditions that we have right now, like that could just happen overnight, faster than expected.
I tweeted about it last night because somebody was saying that, you know, there's going to be a lot less new money because of the liquidity crunches, you know, due to the financial markets right now, right? So everybody's liquidating their stuff to be cash rich so that they can buy stuff when things really hit bottom, or also just de-risk some of their wealth. And that's all true for equities, for bonds, for, you know, for metals, for, you know, like all that stuff. But that stuff is like, it's like orders and orders of magnitude bigger than Bitcoin, right? Bitcoin, all Bitcoin needs is a sneeze. You know, like Apple could buy the whole Bitcoin market like today in one small little move, right?
It's like just, it's like a little drop.
Yeah it's so you can't use these models and these concepts that you see in like ginormous markets, right? Mm-hmm. Ginormous markets, you can't use those models on Bitcoin is uncorrelated, mm-hmm. right? It completely uncorrelated. There is no, it's not inverse correlated, it's just uncorrelated, right? And it's tiny. It's big for, you know, a bunch of crazy people like us into it, right? But it's tiny. So, you know, you get just one player out there that has a bit of reserves that gets some interest on this for whatever reason. It could be other reasons than just store of value. It could be whatever, right? Like boom, you have a rally.
Yeah.
It's that simple, right? Yeah. You know, you could have smaller state actors trying to get out of the petrodollar or trying to get out of whatever, right? And they need to do commerce between them. You know, now you, it's enough money to make Bitcoin go a few orders of magnitude higher.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. So, I mean, what's the market cap right now? 150 billion or even less, probably.
It's tiny.
It's
hard to convey how small that is comparing to other markets, right? And Bitcoin is actually useful.
Right. And, you know, I mean, the unique features, again, you know, the proper monetary properties of Bitcoin, I think this is more and more people are now waking up to the fact that it's absolutely scarce, absolutely limited supply, and with a difficulty adjustment, you know, every 10 minutes, more or less a block. So it's immutable. I mean, the properties are being more and more understood, and that makes me happy.
Yeah. And, you know, just think about it, like, you know, the whole world going into negative interest rates. I mean, God knows, U.S. might go soon too. They're zero now.
Yeah.
You know, people are not going to want to hold cash.
Exactly.
Yeah. And you know, and reality is you cannot hold Apple stock as the only way to hold your wealth, right? I mean, it's completely insane because now you're dependent on consumer markets, right? And you know, like holding gold, actual metal, it's pretty hopeless too. I mean, I don't think people I don't think people appreciate how hopeless it is, gold. I mean, like, you know, it's heavy. Like,
yeah, really transported.
It's really fucking heavy. Yeah. Like, you need forklifts to carry very little, right?
And you need a safe. You need a really good safe for that.
Physical security. You need people with guns. Yeah. You cannot have gold without guns. Right. And a lot of it. And then you have an issue. It's like you cannot authenticate gold without like really expensive equipment. There's a ton of fake gold out there.
Yeah. Right? I always say it's a question of technological innovation and resources, of course. But once the technology advances much, much more, I mean, there's enough, you know, more than enough gold on this planet and under the surface to dig out, you know. It's just don't you think it's just a question of technological innovation?
Yep. Yeah, no, it's a no-brainer. And I think and people are catching up to it, right? Especially for private individuals, right? So private citizens. You know, again, it goes back to you need to pack up your family and move somewhere else, right? Because of whatever circumstances are happening where you live, right? Or government decided to confiscate savings, or all this crap that happens all the time everywhere, and we tend to forget because these things happen in 10 to 20 year time frames, right? You know, the Bitcoin is in your possession, right? Like, you can travel, and you can travel with, like, you can literally go naked remembering 24 words through a border.
This is the ultimate thing. I mean, you know, it's never been done before like that. I mean, this is totally new in human history that people can just cross borders, cross nations without, you know,
with the whole world, literally, everything.
You know, remember their whatever seed phrase if they want to, whatever, you know.
That's right.
It's
amazing. And I mean, I get chills when I think about that because, like, you know, if you were a fairly wealthy family back in the day, right? What people did is when war was coming to their region, right? They packed their paintings, they packed their gold, they packed, like, you know, the things that are transportable, and then they go somewhere else, right? And then when the war is over, they go back to their farm or whatever, like their state. You know, they clean up a bit. They, you know, they'll find the old records or whatever of ownership. And then they hang the paintings again. They put the gold in the bottom of the place. And life goes on, right? This, you know, you're in Europe. You guys have seen this like hundreds of times, right? I mean, how many times, especially border regions, like have been run over by one side or the other, right? Like multiple times. You know, ask a Flemish person how many armies have gone through their towns, right? And you know, unfortunately, only wealthy people were able to do that, right? With the pack and go. Now that's available for everybody, right? You can be the most commoner and you have a chance to pack up your wealth and go. That's a huge deal. It's mobile money. And you don't have to have, you know, a saw and a remelter to take a little piece off to pay somebody for something, right? It's very divisible. I mean, all the properties are there. It's like, exactly, it really is Go 2.0. And I think people are going to wake up to that as need arises. That's why, you know, the Starbucks latte Bitcoin people, I think, are a little bit misguided on this. What they want doesn't matter. What matters is what people need. Yeah. And as people need, it's going to happen. It's, you know.
Out of necessity.
That's how it works.
Yeah. Exactly. Right? Yeah.
Necessity drives everything.
Yeah. Well, Rodolfo, really enjoyed our talk. Do you have any final thoughts or where people can find you? I mean, I'm going to put your Twitter handle anyway, but anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, check out our products at coinkite.com. There's a store there. You know, we have a Telegram group for cold card users. And, you know, you can find me on Twitter. And that's it. I mean, yeah, thanks for having me. This was a fun conversation.
Yeah, thank you. Well, take good care, Rodolfo, and hope to, you know, talk to you soon again in the future.
You too.
All right.
Take care.
Bye. Well, how'd you like this talk with Rodolfo Novak? He's really, really knowledgeable, totally expert in security and building, you know, really good hardware wallets, air gapped. So yeah, but also I was really interested in finding out his perspective, his thoughts on some other issues. So if you loved it as much as I did, please give it a like, share, subscribe, retweet, whatever you do, follow me. It would really help me if your ethical Bitcoin sponsors get in touch with me. My email address is hello@thetotalconnector.com. I'm going to do more also together with some other experts such as Sven Schneiders, more, you know, tutorial videos, instructional videos in German and or English. So if you have any questions or inspirations, ideas you want to come up with, just, you know, hit us up and send me an email or message. Make sure you follow me on Twitter and also Rodolfo Novak. I'm going to put those in the show notes. And thank you so much for support and for listening. And take good care of your security and of your health. All right. Bye.